Oh, Thank you. Yeah, I think it is. Imagine if you do all the webpage, the rest of the info. Oh, if that doesn't do it, try utosf.org. Oh, okay. And you can hear? Test. Test. I don't hear it coming through your speakers. Nice.
So I wish I had more time to prepare for this. Probably only take about maybe 5 to 10 minutes at most. If you have any questions, you can certainly ask me. So basically, let me start by saying what my interest in this was. I was charged with writing a front end to a database at where I work. And I first started out thinking that Django was the way to go because it came with a lot already. Then I got turned off by all the JavaScript I'd have to write. So I started searching around for something else, and I thought, why don't I try OpenOffice Base? I found out it could be scripted with Python, except turned out to be not as good as I expected, and I sort of gave up on it after I played around with it for about a week. The database form views were not very good. They looked kind of rough still. Like, there's a lot of refining that still needed to be done on the UI. And in order to get any kind of a functionality going in the back end, I also got kind of turned off by how much code I'd have to write and learn at that, and all of the documentation I saw beyond the Hello World Python examples was read the Java code, and I wasn't necessarily interested in reading a lot of Java, so I went back to Django. But anyway, so Microsoft recently pushed through their old XML thing in the ISO. I don't know why they cared that much, seeing that the little of OpenOffice I've seen is pretty enterprise all by itself. I guess they wanted something more enterprise. And you'll see that in a second. So the cool thing about OpenOffice is you can script it with Python. It's one of, I think there's C++, Java, and this language called Star Basic, which is, I guess, some variant of Basic. So there's this cool graphic here. You can appreciate that, I guess. Typically, OpenOffice bundles its own version of Python along with everything else. Probably has its own copy of Fortune, too. I'm just guessing. So they've only got 2.4 in there. I think it says it. Oh, 2.3. But, so, I just recently got Ubuntu on this so that I could do this presentation, so I could get OpenOffice on it without any problems. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised that Ubuntu had, it uses the Ubuntu OpenOffice package uses the distro's version of Python, which was nice. So I'm just going to show you a couple of scripts. Actually, so there's basically two models to how you use Python with OpenOffice. There's this one. I think it all fits. Well, you can see. So you have OpenOffice running all by itself, and you run Python alone, and it just has a simple IDC. So you can do that. And then there's this one where you actually have Python running in the UNO process inside of OpenOffice. And with this version, I learned about two different ways you can do this. One is you can actually embed a file URL to your script. Well, actually embed your Python script in your OpenOffice file, because it's just XML, so you unpack it and add it in there with a couple of tabs or whatever. Or you can do the more simple version, which I'll show you, which is to just select the file from the GUI. So let me show you the first thing I'm going to show you. First of all, you can see that I've started OpenOffice with this big ugly command. That's important for this first model. So it knows how to connect this black arrow thing there. So we've got all of those arguments in, and it's running. It's running on this workspace here. So now I'm gonna run this little script here. Yeah, but I'm not gonna do anything. Which variables? You mean? Oh yeah. There's something about. Sorry. Okay. I don't claim to understand all of this code right here. So you import the UNO, whatever that is, and set up a bunch of this stuff here. The really interesting line right here is that. So we're going to do that. Well, whatever. Despite that happening, we got that in our writer file, which is really useful to insert random text into your documents from Python. Okay, so there's that. That illustrates this kind of scheme. And, you know, I really glossed over this here, but there you have full access to the OpenOffice API from Python. So I'm not exactly sure to what extent that has significance, but it's probably pretty powerful. Anything you could script with Java, basically you can script with Python. And I'm sure you can find plugins, Python plugins on the web that you can look at. I'll show you some of those towards the end. Okay, now let me show you this scheme here. So, in order to do this, we need to put the script in this path right here. Depending on your distro, it'll be a little different. Of course, Windows is a lot different. So I've done that. You can see that. So I'm going to run this dialog here. So I go to my macros and run, and it finds it. This neat little drawing here illustrates all of that. So, right. And this is the code behind that. It's a lot of boilerplate just for a crummy dialog box. Let me show you the other one. Yeah. This is the other one. Yeah, the navigating through the menus. Navigate through the menus. And a lot of code. This one? I think a lot of it is this one goes through laboriously setting up all of these geometrical parameters. Yeah, right. This one. Yeah. So that's basically all about as far as I got. Anybody have any questions? I'm pretty sure this is you can do a lot of cool stuff with this if you have the patience to learn the API, which I didn't. I may at some point when I have more motivation. So there's some code that's already been written. Well, each one has its advantages. I read through all of the intro documentation, and they basically said it's like you develop with the IPC, and then when you want to deploy something, you either put it in the shared library, custom library, or you embed it in the document. So you seem pretty logical. Which is the second mode. There's a lot of examples. To connect OpenOffice base to a Postgres database, and it's not included in the default distribution, but there is a plugin that has is pretty good, pretty stable interface to a Postgres database, and I've used that in it. Seemed alright, although I didn't actually write any Python on top of that. Yeah, the tables, and then use the tables from a Postgres database that was running on a server, and then use OpenOffice Base to create the forms. Right. Yeah. Well. Well, I guess you can. I guess that all depends on how much of OpenOffice you can control via the Python API, and there seems to be a lot that you can do. I just didn't really look into it beyond these few little examples. I tried that once. Well, yeah. My guess is you'd use it in the same way that people use Visual Basic for Microsoft Office. That's what I was trying to find. I wish I would have had a URL before. Well, with this one, there's a connection mechanism going on. So, yeah, let me just show you that for a second. So this big version is inserts this text into the document, but this little one does the same thing. And this, the bottom one's the internal one. I'll show you that. I'm sure once you start writing something more significant, this bottom string is different from the top string, so I imagine there's a little difference, but probably pretty close to the same. Great. Okay, that's it.
Anybody came up with today?
I
couldn't put policies to it first? So you've got a bunch of files open, file descriptors and the software, so you have the files and the goals and the pipes, some routes. You've got a whole bunch of them. And all that can turn up to the program gets, like, you know, the routes, file descriptors. And you've also left the plug in the system. These are all the file descriptors I've built. The one for right is the things I actually need for some of these. Just let it go with any of them. Ready. You have to put the system in the same thing. You have to do a process of block. You have to take any CPU URL to one or more of these before. And now you can just kind of take this one, this one, this one, right? Go through the head loop. There are other similar system calls that do similar jobs. You need four, you need three, four, you need one person, seven. Main groups in GUI still gets import it like this, it'll just choose whatever reactor is available. In this case, it'll be the select one. And just tell the main loop to run. That's our failure. It doesn't do anything about it. But it runs. If you want to do something else, well, just stop making it go towards doing something else. It's still the reactor that you care about. Something that's going to happen on TCP port. Going to sort of implement the finger protocol. You have another finger and the finger. I think people like to use them to use for yeah. We're going to tell the reactor that when we care about this port, we're going to listen on it. If somebody connects on there, then you should use this finger factory object that we've instantiated. You should use that. To create something to talk to whatever customer. I'm going to go over what factories and protocols are in a second. think there's been some debate about this.
Process.
actually want to do something with Reddit. So we're going to say in this protocol, we will take a final method for all. Obviously, when the connection is made, the other end, this method will now be called. The method is going to pull up for us. And all we're going to do is pretty much the same program that we set. I'm going to try to connect to it now. Change this to instead of inheriting from protocol we're going to inherit from mine receiver, which is sort of a convenience subclass. There are a lot of those. Or something that's a line base where the other side is going to send one and the other side going back. This line receiver will consider it. When you receive a line from the user, first one that you receive, you're going to send back the word hello and the one that is the action. Something actually useful with the data, you might consider having our server factory do a little bit more and keeping some state inside of it. Let's give it a dip. And then here in the people protocol, we'll just look up status. Yeah, he can. This is what he said. This thing would have been fallen out of context of the words that we have corrupted the connection of the list. But this thing that proves to be directed in the way is open. And we get some of the more interesting stuff. Nothing interesting in the worldview to block. Let's build it into our app. Let's say that when someone asks for a status, we're not just going to look it up in the dictionary, we're going to fetch it from the website. Here. this deferred rent here is a promise that at some future point, I think that we're just going to return. After we get it, we might do something to the deferred first, and we're going to return that to the real estate. What sort of networking thing can you do to get somebody's status? Takeaways from this lesson is that this place sucks. connected to specify both. Call back to the RSM. Just call back to the
One of the nicer utilities of this group is the
beautiful script that is the beam. And that can do all the work for your application. It doesn't want to work in the sockets. The process is very difficult. The process is proper. the other plain text access to tell me into it also. There's a good web server implementation that's a good framework for having resources and paths. Just to let you do threads, if you need to do threads, if there's some of the function that you need to call that has to drop in the folder, after that, rewrite that function, or find it, change it, you know, really call it. You can tell the reactor to run something in such a thread. Creates a deferred, it is always your responsibility, always to handle, to arrange for that to be fired. If you didn't create a deferred, you should never fire. Arrange for the callback. able to call a program just to visit the step process on your program. There's a very similar interface to calling a program under the Twisted framework. I can go to some programs for the next program, being issues, and then send data. It's just another thing for the code box for the ones. There's a very decent database communication layer. So there's a low level one built in with Twisted, and then there's an adapter that will open and makes it package that as well. Stuff you expect to you make a request and you answer that for the data is available from the database. Okay, that's Twisted. I think there's something else that's super vital to understanding what Twisted is. Any questions I can answer about? What's the question that you have? So there's work to be done in some of these aren't just documented as they could be in the book. But there's a pretty stable for the first draft to be done. That's going to be some people did to think that there's a link between fallbacks. So it makes it hard to do. The easiest is to really think in this way. I think it's a lot simpler than the multi-threaded programs. There's a lot of work in multi-threaded programs. learn it next year, but it's just to be able to do this job. Has to provide the interface. The interface says there's a board app with UC. It's pretty close to that. But they do the same kind of stuff. I really like the whole interface thing. Informing to the interface, making sure something comes into the interface, checking the contract with the interface, how to do it. It's a little bit of a site that doesn't figure out. They use SOAPs and voice. Yes. And SOAP really uses this kind of sound. Informant is written by the using one of these, you can mention Apple uses it under the covers in the Google. This is the software that has it right there. Okay. untwisted the
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.